This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast, Rog.
Mother's Day special.
Special, 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 special.
Happy belated Mother's Day to all mummies.
I thought I was going to say thank you, Rog, but I'm not a mummy. Not English mummies, because it's Mothering Sunday happens at some other part of the year.
How does that happen?
I don't know how.
Mother's Day, I love you all, mothers, but Mother's Day always makes me feel a bit terrible.
Yeah.
Somehow, England has decided to have, like we have meters and miles and we drive on the other side, we've arbitrarily declared a completely different Mother's Day, Dave. I don't know how this happens.
We have miles, the imperial system. Meters, I think, are very continental.
Well, whatever.
They're not English.
We do our own crap.
Yeah.
So when Mother's Day rolls around, I call up my lovely mother, Valerie.
Yeah.
I say, Happy Mother's Day.
Yeah, you still haven't learned.
She gets annoyed. She's
not
Mother's Day. Yeah. And then when it is Mother's Day, even in my years of exile, I've not quite worked out when the hell English Mother's Day
Mothering
is.
Mothering Sunday.
Yes, that's what we call it. Mother. Mater.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mater.
I don't know when it is.
I always blew it. I never get in touch with her.
Yeah.
And I love my mum more than Nigel Pearson loves his own flexibility.
Yeah.
But I always blew it. So I'm sorry, Valerie. I do love you.
Mm-hmm.
You don't listen to this podcast.
No.
So we'll move on to talk about the power of motherhood, David.
Yeah.
Which was best captured for me this week by a story told by Philippe Coutinho.
Yeah.
Who revealed how Brendan Rodgers...
Oh, he's a genius, Rodge. He's a great motivator.
Yeah, he gave some insight into happier days for Liverpool. Down the stretch, last season, they were neck and neck. It was within their grasp, the league title. This week, Philippe Coutinho told the English papers exactly how the Rodgers masterstroke psychologically whipping his players into shape using mummies.
Yeah, apparently last season, the Brodge had family members write letters to his players that would inspire them, that they could read in the minutes leading up to the game. Once again, he did it last year, didn't do it this year, didn't think it was a good idea this year. And Coutinho told the papers, I was so anxious for it to be my turn, for the manager, for the Brodge to read the letter from my mum. I said, I waited and waited and waited for it. The manager had spoken to the mothers of every player in the team. He'd been reading a message before every game for months. And finally, my turn had come. This is the thing he's most excited about. At first, I didn't know that the manager would be reading a letter from her. Then he mentioned her name and I was really overwhelmed. It said she loved me, is proud of me, is always with me and missing me. By the way, it sounds like Brodge could have made that up. It could not be. He could have just said that that was in the letter. Because I'm not sure. It's like the envelopes. He's not good with showing people what happens in envelopes. There was more. But those are just the words I needed to hear. It filled me up. The other players were also really moved. Because every week, regardless of whose mother it was with the message, we were all inspired and emotional. Their strong, powerful words pushed us so much.
Oh, dude, this is the...
Didn't do it this season.
The most emotionally manipulative.
Yeah.
Thing of it. First of all, I've got to say, this emotional manipulation and this admission, it made me adore sweet, sweet Philippe Coutinho in new ways.
Skirtle, sorry, your mother didn't write again.
I'd love to have heard the far-right diatribe that must have been contained in Martin Skirtle's mother's missive. But secondly, I've been racking my brain to come up with a list of tasks I do that would be improved by reading an honest, open letter from my mother before doing them. If my mother wrote to me how much she loved me, I wouldn't want to go out and wage war against opponents on a football field. I just want to cuddle up, have a cup of tea, eat a good pie.
Does your mother say she loves you? Because in England, it's not something which people don't throw around the L word.
Yeah.
Certainly parents to children in the way that it happens in the US. Certainly I tell my kids I love them all the time. I don't think...
All the time.
I've ever
I say
heard
it all the time.
My father... Say he
only,
loves me.
Only after funerals.
After discussing a Bruges. will he tell you about
talking
that?
Of pie, David.
Yeah.
We were in Kansas City yesterday.
Day trip. We went for lunch, Rog.
Yeah.
Flew to Kansas City in the morning.
What a city.
Went and had lunch with a bunch of GFOPs. Thanks so much for coming out.
Yeah.
To Joe's Barbecue. It was amazing, Rog.
We loved every second.
Yeah.
My wife was following our MIB road trip on our Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Hashtag I was there.
Yeah, we were there.
Yeah. You weren't there too, Robbie.
Didn't see you, Kyle.
Hashtag not invited.
Uh-huh.
my wife told me our drive through the heartlands was eerily like Don Draper's in Mad Men, only more suboptimal.
Yeah.
But God, I love
Better
Kansas
car, though,
City.
In our mini.
Yeah. What a footballing culture they're brewing there. I mean, Sporting Kansas City are everywhere. They're almost as omnipresent as the George Brett for President stickers that we saw and loved and brought home with us.
One thing that really struck me about the Kansas City GFOPs who we met at Joe's is lots of people who suffer in the blue-red dichotomy, Rog.
Yep.
They cheer for a blue team in MLS, Kansas City, and they cheer for a red team in the Premier League, Arsenal.
A lot of Arsenal.
A lot of Liverpool.
A lot of Everton.
A lot of Man United.
A lot of Everton shirts came out to see us at Joe's. It's quite a lot.
Queen's Park Raisins
shirt. More than one. The Queen's Park Raisins shirt.
Deutschland shirt.
Was a total delight.
Yeah, absolutely.
I will say the Zeman sandwich that we ate there.
Oh.
It was. I mean, to me,
that
David,
was a good sandwich.
Barbecue.
Yeah, we came back with a lot of barbecue sauce. Had to check that in. You can't take barbecue sauce as a carry-on.
Oh, barbecue. It's what American freedom tastes like when I bite into it, in the same way as I think England tastes like good pie.
It does. Very,
you're talking about your red-blue dichotomy.
Yeah.
I'm not going to let you gloat, but we should mention British elections. We won't discuss, Davey, but this was my favourite story from the South Wales Evening Post.
Oh, I saw this story, Rog. An angry voter drew a picture of a penis on his ballot paper in the elections last week instead of an X for a Tory MP. And it counted as a vote. Conservative MP Glyn Davis, no relation, today revealed how the voter's penis protest backfired by giving him the extra vote.
Yeah, the South Wales editor
Democracy.
Said, amazingly, because it was neatly drawn within the confines of the box, the returning officer deemed it a valid vote. Farmer Mr. Davis held his seat by a significantly enlarged majority, was the payoff joke. If they don't allow you to draw undercarriages on election ballots in England, David, there'd be almost no votes to count.
Yeah, it's very true. It's how most people employ their democracy, Rog, their democratic right to vote.
Talking about red and blue.
Yep.
Also, we're releasing next week, Davo, I think Tuesday, possibly Tuesday or Wednesday.
Yeah.
We're releasing our Women's World Cup enhancement.
It's good, the Women's World Cup enhancement kit.
It's red.
Yeah.
If you're red, there's a blue. If you're blue, there's a white.
If you're a Leeds United fan.
It's a collaboration with the amazing Mitchell and Ness.
Yeah.
The Philadelphia-based company. They're talking, they're friends.
Yeah,
Mitchell and Ness. That crafted every throwback jersey that I own. We got this beautifully designed by them. Limited edition, incredibly limited edition. Men in Blazers snapback cap.
There's one of them.
And
no,
scarf
there's more
set. Than one. There's a handful.
Yeah.
I've got to say, they've done an amazing job designing it. Let's just say for now, we'll post the images as soon as producer Lexi has taken them. Let's just say there are dragons involved in the design. Mothers are dragons. And they'll be up, I hope, next Tuesday or Wednesday. They are very, very gorgeous.
Tasty, American States United. Yeah, tasty, tasty gear. I'm getting a lot of Women's World Cup fever right now, Rog. I'm really, really looking forward to it. Okay, we've got a packed show. We're going to recap Liverpool's 1-1 draw with Chelsea,
pre-season game,
and Stevie G's laminated Stamford Bridge send-off. We're going to dive into a desperation-cloaked bottom of the table, and we're going to break down MLS's very first New York derby.
Generations of hatred rose to the surface.
Yes. The lead singer of The Vaccines and a massive Manchester United supporter, Justin Young, is going to join us.
I bet you he speaks to us from outside a Thai curry house.
Whoa, you are psychic, Rog. Okay, to the football. Time to crack open a Guinness. In full disclosure, Rog, I've already cracked open my Guinness. I just couldn't wait for it. So, there you go. He made it. No beer has been spilled. That could be a first on a Men in Blazers podcast. Excellent pouring, Rog. Cheers.
To Kansas City.
Yes.
To barbecue, to freedom.
Absolutely. Okay, we're now 36, 38ths of the way through the Premier League season, Rog, for almost everybody. That reduces to 18, 19ths. That will let you know how close it is to being done. As teams in the table's nether regions bite their nails and suffer sleepless nights. Chelsea is like the college student who finished finals early and has nothing to do but sleep in and sip Guinness. Chelsea 1, Liverpool 1. A game that saw Liverpool give the champions a guard of honour. The Stamford Bridge, a somewhat reluctant guard of honour. The Stamford Bridge faithful gave Stevie G a send-off that was part reverence, part ridicule, part confusion. There was even the occasional kick of a football in this game. A goal apiece from John Terry and the aforementioned Gerrard cancel each other out and extinguish Liverpool's hopes of a Champions League spot. Rog.
Oh, this was a game which in recent years has gifted us
the Luis Suarez bite.
Yeah.
It's given us the Stevie Gerrard slip.
Yeah.
And it's given us the Diego Costa stamp.
Allegedly.
And also the return of the Diego Costa stamp. Diego Costa stamp 2.
Yeah.
This time,
well,
David,
that was the same game.
It served up 22 yeah. men running around a field in late season dead rubber football.
Ugh.
But I think it will be less remembered for the elite athleticism on display.
Mm-hmm.
And more as another sad notch on Stevie Gerrard's morose slink towards Premier League retirement. I've got to say, Joan Didion's year of magical thinking is more uplifting than watching Stevie G just drag it to the end. For me, the highlights of this game, they all took place before kickoff or in the terraces during the game. I mean, Stevie G, let's go back for his day because we're really going to focus a lot on him. It began with him slumping out the locker room into the tunnel and waiting sullenly like a seventh grade delinquent outside the principal's office. We saw the tunnel very differently, David.
Yeah, I saw it. I mean, I believe that Terry comes out. Gerrard is waiting. Terry comes out. There's no exchange between the two captains, Rog. And then
that they are side by side. Two men who 10 years played on the same England side, inherited yeah. captaincies from each other, spent, one would imagine, session after session in the England setup together.
Yeah, talking drinking or football practice. They didn't really notice each other. And then they suddenly realised that each other were there. Who would have thought they'd meet each other at the front of the tunnel? And they had a little warm embrace and Stevie G gave him a little tap on the tummy. And they went out and played some football.
It's how you and I see life so differently.
Yeah.
Because to me, Stevie G was there,
yeah.
then John Terry led the Chelsea team out beside him.
yeah.
And what followed really was just 55 seconds of human agony.
Yeah.
Two men, side by side, doing their best to pretend they couldn't see each other. The only thing I could think of that would be like it is if you Katy Perry and Taylor Swift ran into each other in the line for the toilets. I imagine they have very posh porter
yeah.
cabins at the Grammys.
Mm-hmm.
And they just completely blank each other. And then John Terry realised, hang on a minute, I'm John Terry. I'm used to being snubbed. And his therapist has given him a tactic called the icebreaker,
yeah.
which is to turn around. And after about 40 seconds, he just taps poor Stevie, who's pretending to be wriggling his like captain's armband and busying with it. And then they two just look at each other. Oh, I didn't see you there, mate. They do that, both of them. And they do the cold shaking of hand. And if you watch the handshake in slow motion, David, which I have done several times, you can pinpoint, I believe,
yeah.
the exact second Stevie G, his inner voice just tells him that he was suddenly at one finally with the decision to move and take exile in California. I don't think I'm exaggerating.
Until John Terry goes and joins the Galaxy at the end of next season, Rog.
He's going to join LA too.
Terry did just recently go up and play in Gerrard's charity game, Rog. There was several shots of the warmth between those two players.
Don't
I believe the irony is
narrative.
The irony is that this is actually one of John Terry's closest relationships in football, Rog, with Steven Gerrard. It just is.
In life.
That says, in life, that
Get,
says
But Dave, it
quite
gets worse for Stevie G.
Yeah.
He's like Newcastle, but in a person. It gets worse for Stevie
yeah.
G. He then had to lead out his team and line up in a guard of honour,
yeah.
which I believe scientifically is the single most resentful guard of honour in human history.
Yeah,
they had to honour title winners Chelsea.
Yeah,
I do believe the French people looked happier when forced to line up and watch victorious German panzers rumble down the Champs-Élysées in 1940.
Is similar, good reference.
Stevie G had to watch the team he almost joined in 2005.
Yeah.
When Mourinho came in hard for the Liverpool icon with a $55 million bid. And what do you think, Dave, when you're positive, optimistic, slightly doolally mind, went through Stevie G's mind
yeah.
as he watched the team he did not join celebrate the Premier League title victory he never won?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he much enjoyed it. But don't you think that to some extent, Rog, we are now just being very English in the way that we're refusing to give Steven Gerrard his glory and his moment to go and leave, that we're relishing the moment.
I think we're objectively analysing what happened, because to me, and I have watched The Guard of Honour, I've watched
in slow motion
for 47 times to prep for the TV show with JW. And I've got to say, Stevie G's face when Chelsea walked past him, I have seen it on a television screen before, but only once. It was when James Franco was playing Aaron Ralston in 127 hours.
Yeah.
And Stevie G pulled the same face Franco pulled in that second when he realised his arm had gotten stuck in the canyon wall and he'd have to hack it off with a penknife. Uh-huh. Same face, same emotions.
I think the look on his face, though, Rog, could have been because he was cheering a bunch of players who have barely played a minute, including Ruben Loftus-Cheek making his first start, getting a guard of honour during his first start. As you said, Ruben Loftus-Cheek, it's going to be all uphill from now. He's going to expect a guard of honour every time he plays
from Stevie
the Chelsea
G.
Football Club. From Stevie G.
It was his first start. He thinks you get it every single year. He's a 19-year-old boy giant.
Yeah.
Big boy. Mm-hmm. Symbolic cameo. He came on, I think he came on to hit a single, wouldn't you say? Play with discipline.
Yeah.
Not try and hit a home run.
Yeah.
6'4" defensive midfielder. Probably made English fans salivate.
Yeah. Well, he joined the club when he was 8, Rog. His, I think the one thing you could see, he did keep it very simple. I know he got a bit of criticism from a certain Robbie Musto for like being too simple, but I think the briefing for him is don't mess it up, do what you can do. His ability to tackle, he's a baby Matic, Rog. He's got those long legs, he can get in, he's tackle, he's got speed, but wait to see what this kid will do.
Jose Mourinho only brought him on, I think, to try and rival Danny Drinkwater as the best name in the English Premier League. He wants that for Chelsea too.
Yeah,
he loves trophies. The game itself, it had the mood of it was like Liverpool was scrappy do, not measuring up to Scooby Doo. And just to show all my cards, I'm of the school of thought that Scrappy-Doo killed the Scooby-Doo franchise as serious drama.
I know, we've discussed that before on the pod more than once.
Would Chelsea care was the big question.
Yeah.
We found pretty quickly a Jose Mourinho coach team is programmed to always care.
Always care. Bigger question might have been which Chelsea defender was going to go and score first. You know, all of the defenders, actually except for Felipe Luis, seem to be capable of scoring at will. And John Terry, again, from a Ruben Loftus-Cheek assist from getting in the face of Mignolet, Rog, John Terry heads home from the Fabregas corner. And what a game John Terry had overall. I mean, despite all the joking, Rog, this guy's season finished third in the Football Writers Player of the Year voting. Might have done even better than that. What an amazing season, an amazing game.
Laugh at him all you want as a human character, but you can never question his desire as a footballer. This was his 39th goal, the most by a defender in the Premier League era, while they've been keeping records since 1992. And an amazing statistic, Davo.
Yeah.
This was Chelsea's 20th goal scored by a defender this season.
It's amazing.
I think Liverpool strikers have scored 13 in comparison. Mourinho, a man who makes his best attackers trap back and defend.
Yeah.
And he expects his defenders to burst forth and score.
Yeah. Total football. I think Courtois's got to be disappointed. He didn't score more this season, Rog.
Yeah, I think he'll be shipped off.
Yeah.
If he doesn't start working at both ends of the field. Who was looking down? A former Chelsea legendary goal scorer looking on with approval.
Oh, it's good to see. It was good to see him again.
Do you remember him?
Yeah, Diego Costa sitting in the stands. Not the cheap seats. There are no cheap seats at Chelsea.
The
nosebleeds. Pretty far, far back up in the Matthew Harding, Rog.
You know, he's an old hero. They brought him back. It's like old timers day. Mm-hmm. It was a long time ago he scored 19 goals in 24 Premier League games.
Yeah.
Now he's just another face at Stamford Bridge. At Nolte's, Rebecca, legendary GFOP, sent us an extreme close-up of Diego Costa in the stands. He had his hat on forwards this week.
Yeah.
And she noticed he was wearing a hat from the California designer Chris Stamp, whose label is Stamped.
Yeah.
The subtle, cheeky poetry of Diego Costa, a man who appreciates life is always richest
when lived.
It's amazing. I was blown away.
Yeah.
Life is always richest when lived on the symbolic level. I can't wait to read a volume of his poetry when it comes out, maybe over the summer. In truth, Liverpool laboured. With Lambert, they demonstrated surplus brawn, but a deficit of pace in the build-up compared to lineups past.
Yeah.
And when they scored, the goal came from
Steven Gerrard, Rog. Set piece delivery from Jordan Henderson. Rog, a very good delivery, but terrible defending from Chelsea from a set piece. One moment they seem to switch off in the entire game. And Steven Gerrard at the far post with a sort of pretty simple routine, straightforward, not a glory goal, but a pretty straightforward finish.
He then followed footballing protocol by not celebrating a goal when scored against teams he wishes he'd played for. He just trotted back to the centre line, leaving a trail of self-loathing and regret oozing out behind him. As I watched him, I thought of Kurt Vonnegut's quote, "Of all the words of mice and men, the saddest are, it might have been." At On The Dock tweeted us, at Men in Blazers, "John Terry and Stevie G score in the same match in 2015. Has the English Premier League become its own elephant graveyard?"
Yeah.
We didn't get an answer to that question. We're too busy engaging with the laminated signs.
Yeah, the laminated signs. A little bit of organisation from the Chelsea faithful, Rog.
Made by grown men.
Yeah.
Possibly the most Chelsea thing of all time. Waving at Steven Gerrard, a legend, art projects that they've worked on as grown men to try and probably get over the urge to throw French men off the Paris metro in racially tinged incidents. Why, Davo, you asked the question.
What?
They're getting Chelsea fans, they're trying to vent it. Art projects. It's the new, it keeps them busy, keep your hands busy.
Do you think these are the same guys who done the laminated signs as who are responsible for that shocking incident, Rob?
The devil makes work for idle hands, Davo. The devil makes work for idle hands.
You don't trust a laminator.
You asked the great question.
Yeah.
Why do we crap on those we love, Dave? I mean, Derek, let's compare, contrast. Derek Jeter retires. Spends
you could
all
substitute
year.
The why do we English for why do you?
Why do we? But what, everyone fates Jeter, even the Red Sox, his mortal enemies. They present him with a special second base that had the Yankees pinstripes and his number 2 on it and a piece of the Green Monster that says respect. We prefer our heroes to limp off as broken humans.
But the American sports narrative, and you can see what, you know, NBC Sports did with this, despite the sort of heavy English contingent of people working at NBC Sports. NBC Sports are giving Steven Gerrard a hero send-off. They are, in the Gerrard narrative, the applause from the crowd, almost universal applause from the crowd. They are, you know, preparing for the next two games, and they're going to give Gerrard the send-off. But in England, there is something wired into us that is an American story, a hero leaving the game and being saluted by everyone and feeling great about it. We feel a need to read into it sadness and all of the things he's failed to achieve and how badly it's going to work out for him in Los Angeles. It just seems to, who is the last English player to retire from the Premier League a hero?
Bobby Moore.
He wasn't in the Premier League. I don't think it's ever happened, Rog.
Well, it can't happen because we have to break them so that we feel better about ourselves, Dave. I was trying to read into this before I came on air, and I'm halfway through a very interesting paper by a Dutch psychologist, Wilco Vingonjik, who wrote a research paper about this phenomenon, and she attributes it to low self-esteem and self-loathing.
Yeah.
Two friends of mine.
Yeah, and most English people.
Yeah, I mean, by the way, I have to say, when he was substituted, Stevie G, to a mix of cheers and, I'd say, sporadic outbreaks of wanker signs.
Yeah. Mostly cheers and mostly
applause. And, by the way, Jose Mourinho leading the applause and being seen to applaud the applause afterwards.
Yeah.
It was very poignant. But within seconds of his retreat, Dave, Chelsea fans resume with the Stevie G song. Within seconds, Stevie G, you know, Gerrard, he slipped on his effing arse, he gave it to Denver Bar, Stevie Gerrard. Learn those words, LA Galaxy enemies. In his post-match conference, Stevie G, I mean, it was fascinating, if you pass
his
words.
Well, for two reasons, yeah.
"I was more happy with the ovation from Liverpool fans. Chelsea fans have shown me respect for a couple of seconds, but they slaughtered me all game. So I'm not going to get drawn into wishing Chelsea fans well. It was nice of them to turn up for once."
Yeah.
It was fascinating. You were more fascinated with the fact that he said, made a point of saying, Jose Mourinho,
the greatest manager in the world, again and again and again, something that I'm sure that Brendan Rodgers doesn't like hearing, but made a real point of saying that. Your point about that is you're not sure that he really believes that Jose Mourinho is the greatest manager in the world, but that he might be making a point against Brendan Rodgers by saying that. I think he actually believes that, but who knows?
It was a fascinating press conference to watch. When I last interviewed Stevie G last season, it was before a derby game against Everton, and I asked him what it feels like to be the butt of every howling Everton fan's comments for 90 minutes. and he just suppressed a smile and then looked into the camera and said, it was brilliant. He goes, they make comments, do they? Like, I can't hear them. Nothing they can say bothers me. And then he giggled and looked away again. Great footballers, Davo, it used to be kind of howling objects of derision, crude base forms of abuse. Why do you think it got to him so much?
I'm not sure how much it really annoyed him. I think he was definitely caught up in the moment. What I do think is, in the long term, I think he will feel differently about not just Chelsea fans. I think he'll feel differently about English fans. The reality is, the vast majority of English fans of football respect Gerrard a lot, just like they respect Lampard. And actually, as a player, I think the vast majority of fans respect Terry as well. And these have been the three greatest English Premier League players of their generation, one would probably sort of not find much argument in saying. But
up there with Jags.
Yeah, up there with Jags. But I think in time, I think he'll realise that the fact that he did win respect of most of the fans is going to mean something to him, rather than being involved in the sort of internecine, very loud, very charged, you know, aggro that exists between fans of opposing clubs. And I think he's more caught up in that now that he's playing for them.
Oh, I mean, to me, maybe I've read a bit too much Arthur Miller, Dave.
Yeah.
But I am absolutely fascinated by the end of Stevie Gerrard as a Premier League force. I think he's caught up in the raw emotions of the sands of time running out on an epic Premier League career. What could be more human? I think there's the regret of never winning that Premier League with a club he loves so dearly. And I was really quite moved with how he spoke about Liverpool after the Chelsea game. It's a love affair. The traumatic memory of the fateful, cruel title-losing slip. I can't imagine how much that pains him. It is. It's like something from an Arthur Miller play, a man haunted by his own actions. The knowledge he could have joined Mourinho on countless occasions at several different clubs in the pursuit of aforementioned glory. And I'd say, if you speak to anyone at Liverpool off the record, a man seething at Brendan Rodgers and the way he's been treated at the last. I mean, many of the Liverpool staff will say, or people close to Stevie G, there's an enormous rift that exists between the two men. I mean, you only need to look at Stevie Gerrard's body language towards Rodgers when he was substituted. I think Stevie showed more warmth towards John Terry in the tunnel. But worry not, those of you who are more excited by guards of honour, even more than football itself, you're going to be satiated again this weekend. Liverpool and Crystal Palace players will welcome Gerrard from the players' tunnel. He'll walk on solo for his last home game at Anfield. There'll be an amazing mural on the Kop. He's played there for 17 years, 11 of which he's been the club captain.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, look, and he did spoke in the media this week about, you know, that it started to, he decided he wanted to leave to go to the Galaxy at the point that he was restricted, told by Brendan Rodgers he was going to be a squad player, that he wasn't going to be a sort of, you know, first on the team sheet. And I suppose one can say that it has been a little bit sad for Gerrard, and also for Lampard as well, that they're finishing their Premier League careers as sort of, not bit players, but they are just squad players, you know, not always automatic on the team sheet to go and play. And you always want to be a player. You always talk about players that you want to retire when you're on top. And they're not retiring at the top of their game. That is true.
Yeah, he's retiring when, in Roger Goodell's language, it's now more probable than not, Liverpool won't be in the Champions League next season.
Yeah.
A massive, massive blow to the club who fought so hard to return last season. They're one and out. And how they move in the off-season will be a remarkable test of John Henry's ownership. Fourth place locked up by
Manchester United. Rog, Crystal Palace 1, Manchester United 2. Liverpool's loss combined with this result all but ensure LVG will saunter onto the continent for the Champions League next year. A first-half Juan Mata penalty and a 78th-minute Marouane Fellaini header give United their first win in four matches.
After slumping through three losses without a goal, David De Gea was again probably their man of the match, but United ground out a narrative-turning victory courtesy of a Marouane Fellaini far post header. What a marvel of a man he is. I noticed this week, more than I have in a while, the amount of hair he has in just one of his wonderfully bushy eyebrows, Davo, outweighs all of the ones that we got on our heads together. And I also loved his admission this week that he cried after Manchester United sacked David Moyes.
Mm.
He told The Guardian, "There were tears. This is normal. I am a human being." What's the most unexpected thing that has made you cry? Because I was blown away that a player would cry when David Moyes was fired. It just, that flummoxed me. But then he'd go and tell, I just loved that he told the newspapers. And I thought, what? That's such an unexpected thing to make you cry. Not a plane flight movie, but...
Oh, well, I was going to say McFarland, which I watched on the plane the other day. That completely got me. That should be illegal on planes, that film.
You think they should ban it? Took me apart.
Should be banned. If you can't take barbecue sauce on a plane, Rog, should not be able to watch McFarland on a plane. That's completely, completely out of order.
I've been watching, because to become an American and get my citizenship, you have to watch Friday Night Lights season 1.
Yeah, I love that
series.
And
I never watched it, because I was writing a book when it came out. So I'm catching up.
Uh-huh.
And I watched the Homecoming episode.
Yeah.
Of season 1. I'll just say Jason Street.
Yeah.
Jason Street.
Make me sob. You every time, Jason
sob.
Street.
By the way, changing the subject to more manly things. Mm-hmm. This is the week that marks a decade of American ownership for United. The Glazer family of Tampa Bay Bucks fame, or should that be shame, took over United in a leveraged buyout 10 years ago. Fascinating, half full, half empty kind of glass situation for United fans when they think about the Glazers. Henry Winter and the Daily Telegraph wrote, "The arrival of American brothers has eroded family values, not just at United, but in all of English football, the way they've treated the club. But at the same time, United have won more trophies over the last decade than any other English football team. Their owners have definitely spread a torturous anxiety amongst United's faithful after saddling the formerly debt-free club of hundreds of millions of dollars worth of debt. I think that's probably made even worse by their unwillingness to give any interviews or reveal any kind of future plans for the club." Joel Glazer, I love this quote. When he took over the club in 2005, he announced, "People who know me and know my family know that at any time they can come up to us and approach us and we're happy to talk." The Glazers have granted only one interview in the last 10 years, and that was upon the takeover to Manchester United's in-house television. So we'll see. Sir Alex may have papered over the cracks at the club, and United fans just can't shake the fear that they're merely cheering for the Glazers family personal ATM.
I think one thing we're going to talk about more over the next few weeks as we get to the end of the season, Rog, is where all these contending teams are going into next season. And, you know, talk about the glass half full, glass half empty. I think for United, for Arsenal, for Manchester City, for Liverpool, for Tottenham, there seem to be more questions than there are answers. And for every positive, there are just massive, massive question marks about where they're going, what their plan is, what their tactic is. And I think that we've said a lot that Chelsea won this season. However many times Arsene Wenger tells us that he won the back half of the season, Chelsea got a 13-point lead early and pretty much never relinquished that extensive lead. Chelsea didn't play great football this season, but they won by a landslide by just having a strategy and sticking to that strategy. If you asked me what is the strategy of these other teams in the Premier League, what is the way they want to play football, what is their transfer strategy, what is the tactics that they're trying to run through the whole club, I don't think I could tell you.
Yeah, well, talking about transfer strategies, probably better news for United fans. They locked
Memphis
up the signing. Memphis Depay, $39 million, 21-year-old showman striker from PSV. He's larger than life. He's talent-soaked. I think he may appear in the Men in Blazers show next season.
A couple of times. We'll have a couple of Memphis highlights.
He scored 27 goals in 39 games this season.
Yeah,
asterisk, they were scored in the Dutch league. But he's been coveted by, amongst others, PSG and predicted by many to be poised to evolve to world-class talent level. The thing I love about him is that he has a tattoo, Dave. He has many tattoos, but he has a tattoo that says successful on his inner lip.
I love that. I approve of that.
That tattoo, to me, it's the equivalent of Floyd Mayweather having an employee who does the chewing gum pop. You only have a tattoo saying successful on your inner lip if you want people to write that you have a tattoo on your inner lip saying successful.
Yeah.
And do you have it tattooed upside down so that when you turn, you look down? It's the right way, or do you have it so that you know it's the right way?
That's confusing.
I've got so many questions about a lip tattoo.
Upside down, I know. It's very, very difficult. Okay, Rog, time to go down and plumb the table's annals. Newcastle 1, West Brom 1. Newcastle put a band-aid over the gaping wound caused by 8 straight losses. Victor Anichebe.
Septic pussy wound.
Septic pussy wound. Victor Anichebe put the baggies ahead in the 32nd minute, but John Carver's men answered back through Spanish striker Jack Coolback. No, it was Ayuzi Perez. 9 minutes later, Newcastle now in 17th place, 2 points in the drop zone with the Raisins and West Ham remaining for them.
Open the Premier League moon door.
Joink.
In the same way Hull are trying to change their name to Hull Tigers.
Yeah.
Newcastle's last 8 weeks have seemed as if they're trying to change their name officially to it would get worse for Newcastle.
Yeah.
One of my favourite interviews of this season, Newcastle's Stephen Taylor told the English press that playing for the team is, quote, the fastest kamikaze rides you can find in the world. And then he explained why. He said, the supporters are diehard here. You see fans with their tops off when it's freezing cold, nipples like ice cubes. You need balls of steel. If you haven't, then grow some, for God's sake. But the lads, they've got the bollocks.
SackStephenTaylor.com has probably already been purchased.
Just to recap, balls of steel.
Yeah.
Number two, nipples like ice cubes.
Yeah.
The bollocks.
Yeah.
I think this is a man who's wasting his time as a footballer. He should be writing Harlequin romance novels, Davies.
Yeah.
That would be an amazing book. I'd buy that book. Any book called Nipples Like Ice Cubes.
The amazing thing about this is that Newcastle might just stay up, Rog. That is the most amazing part of this story.
So true. Because also, Colaccini wrote a letter, Captain Colaccini, open letter to fans suggesting the team are family.
Yeah.
Which made me instantly think of Jonathan Franzen's The Corrections. But in this game, David, they were far from being 11 best friends.
Mm-hmm.
But they did start with more guts and drive.
They did.
A euphemism for saying they didn't concede within the first 36 seconds.
I know. It took them 32 minutes, Rog, before Anichebe, one presumes, accidentally headed the ball into the back of the net.
Newcastle had just had a shot cleared off the line as well. And then 120 seconds later, down West Brom went and scored the goal. Made me think of the Hunter S. Thompson chestnut. Luck is a very thin wire between survival and disaster. Not many people can keep their balance on it. But just when American Newcastle fans started to Google, how do I watch championship football in the United States?
Yeah.
John Carver's team summoned the perfect response.
Yeah, last weekend, Roger, it was the weekend of penalties. This weekend was the weekend of crap goals. Like, we had some of the best. I love a crap goal. We had crap goals all weekend. And this from a Ryan Taylor set-piece delivery. Yossi Perez, he just sort of bumbled it in. It moved in. I thought it was slow motion, first of all. I thought it was on the slow motion setting by TV.
Watching Newcastle have spine. Yeah. It was like seeing Tim Riggins suddenly sober up.
Wow. We're suddenly going to get a lot of Friday Night Lights references. I'm going to enjoy these.
Only from season one. Only from season one. John Carver.
Yeah.
Probably the most astonished man in the stadium on the bench.
Smash hasn't come up yet.
I do love Matt Saracen.
Yeah.
But Matt Saracen could not exist outside of fiction. That is such a contrived character. Matt Saracen is the captain of the chess club. Matt Saracen is not a football player.
I think Matt Saracen looks like Clint Dempsey. There's something facially very, very similar between Matt Saracen and Clint Dempsey.
Matt Saracen is Ducky from Pretty in Pink 2.0, somehow welded onto Harry Kane's athletic ability. It just does not work like that. You do not have that sense of self if you are the high school quarterback.
He wants to be QB1.
Tim Riggins.
Back to Tim Riggins.
The most astonished man in the stadium.
Yeah.
John Carver on the bench.
That wasn't Jack Kulback.
That was part one, but I think also he's never seen his team do anything like that in training. He just sat there and beamed with his giant JC on his tracksuit, which I realised, thinking about it, because we tweeted out to him like, JC.
He's awesome.
John Carver, one of the top three JCs in the world.
Yeah.
Jack Colbatt, John Carver, Jesus Christ, obviously. Yeah. The whole Father, Son, and the Holy
Jesus
Ghost.
Jesus Christ made that list.
But then we got thousands of people tweeting us better JCs. And I've realised you can make a football team out of JCs.
Yeah.
I think it may be the most common famous initials in the world. Uh-huh. You could do an EA Sports FUT team.
Yeah.
FIFA Ultimate team,
okay.
Just out of JCs.
JCs. Okay, go ahead.
And not have to call on the services of the Son of God at all.
Okay, who's in goal?
John Cleese.
Yeah. Well, he's tall.
Back
He's
four.
Got a great reach.
Back
yeah.
four.
Yeah.
Going John Cheever.
Yeah.
John Candy.
Yeah.
Jeremy Clarkson. Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
Johnny Cash running up and down.
Yeah. I want Chirundolo.
I want him up and down, getting up and down. Midfield, holding it together. Yeah. That June Carter in the centre.
Yeah.
Jarvis Cocker.
Oh,
just
good,
to create
good move.
The Juan Mata kind of.
Excellent.
And then I'd have either flank, Julius Caesar.
Yeah.
Loves out flanking the opposition. Yeah. And then John Cusack, I thought.
Oh, really?
Yeah, a little bit of...
John Champion, one of my favourite commentators, he's on the bench.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Up front, you've got Jackie Chan playing off Julia Child. And then
Julie Christie there somewhere or not?
She's on the bench.
Okay.
By John Champion. We've got Jorge Campos as our second goalkeeper if we need him. We don't need him because we've got John Cleese in goal. Who needs Campos when you got Cleese? And then Joey Chestnut, I thought, wild couple of last minutes. Joan Collins, if we need the old head.
Yeah, Jackie just Collins. Experience. You can also have Jackie. They're not speaking.
Yeah. No, that's a bit like John Terry and Stevie G on the same team. Uh-huh. Don't do that. Jimmy Carter.
Yeah.
God, what?
Conrad doesn't make this team?
When the team need a players-only speech, some real inspiration, just wake up Jimmy Carter, who's asleep at
Jack
the back.
Jack Charlton, isn't there?
He's on there.
Okay.
Jacques Cousteau.
That's so good.
I don't think there's a more famous initials. Uh-huh. So that's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. When he has JC on his tracksuit, it probably doesn't help the Newcastle kit man know that it's John Carver's. It could be any
it
of those
Jimmy
people.
Chu. Yeah. Trying to figure it out. Good point, Rog.
Well done, Newcastle. Only one thing we say to relegation.
Yeah.
That is not today.
Yeah.
You did have to suffer through nerves and basic lack of skills in the second half. Mm-hmm. And the fact that West Brom are essentially a team made of forest oak trees. And they hit the bar in the 73rd minute, West Brom.
Yeah.
Causing an entire city sphincter to tighten, which is probably only just relaxing now. We asked, how does it feel to be a Newcastle fan now on the final whistle? At David Hetch said, same as always, like living a Raymond Carver poem in real life. At Shouting Street said beautifully, he said, it feels like there's been a brief power outage before an execution.
Oh.
Talking about executions, David.
Oh, Rod, so sad. Hull 0.
We lost some friends this
Burnley
weekend.
Burnley 1. We lost a friend. This could cause the loss of another friend. Hull 0, Burnley 1, despite a 62nd minute Danny Ings winner. Wow. Burnley are now mathematically relegated as the Claret sink. They do their best to take Steve Bruce's Hull City Tigers with them. Hull slip into the relegation zone with only Spurs.
Seals get clubbed.
And Man United left to play, Rod. They need points from Spurs and or Man United, Rod.
Before we mourn Burnley, let's just celebrate the way they went down.
They went down winning.
They did.
How are Burnley going down? All I can remember Burnley doing is winning and drawing games they weren't supposed to, Rod.
Well, you might remember teams that have scored less goals than Burnley in the Premier League. If you did, you'd be a genius.
Yeah.
Because very few have had the same just basic inability to put the ball. I think in the last 5 years, only Norwich in 2013-14 scored fewer than 30 goals this season. Burnley thus far have scored 27.
Said JW just growled at the mention of Norwich beloved Ipswich.
But 631 minutes of goalless, constipated football came to an end in this game. Danny Ings, his goal drought ended at 1,036 minutes. He'll be a perfect Liverpool player. And in response, Hull, in the game, this was the game they were meant to win, their easier game on their run in from hell, managed only 3 shots on target. They now need, as you said, a win against Spurs or Steve Bruce's team as a player. Manchester United. I'll miss Sean Dyche, David.
Oh, we all will, Rog.
And his sideburns, or his technically his side swords. And the saddest part to me, Dave, is that generations of future American kids, they won't know what a Burnley is.
Yeah.
They'll ask their mum and dad questions like, where do I rent a minivan in Burnley?
Yeah, they won't know that it's Dave Fishwick. I think Burnley are going to come straight back up, Rog. Look, they announced this week they're not going to have to get rid of any players, except the ones that are going to want to leave. When they go down, I think they're in great shape. I feel Burnley are going to come straight back up.
In their honour, Dave, Remember Me by Margaret Mead. Remember me, to the living I'm gone, to the sorrowful I will never return, to the angry I was cheated, but to the happy I am at peace. Burnley Football Club.
I just cried, Rog.
Fear for Hull, Dave, is May. Americans love it because it's the month in which the Constitutional Convention began in Philadelphia in 1787.
Yep.
Hull have never won a Premier League game in May. They've won none, drawn 3, lost 8. Come on, Steve Bruce. We need you.
We need you badly for narrative reasons.
the Pie Lobby.
Oh, talking of narrative, Rog. Manchester City 6, QPR 0. We just talked about how valiantly and classily Burnley left the Premier League. At the other end of the spectrum.
Yes.
If spectrums were way, way bigger than they can actually be in science, Rog, is the Queen's Park Raisins. They joined Burnley in the trip through Premier League's moon door. Sergio Aguero hat-trick, Rog, and goals from Alexander Kolarov, David Silva, and even James Milner.
Arsenal's
Rog,
James Milner.
Give the Raisins an exit befitting Bernie Madoff, Richard Nixon, and Puck from Real World San Francisco. Remember him, Rog?
I think he plays for Hull now.
Yeah.
Could do.
Oh, you're right. Burnley went with dignity.
Uh-huh.
QPR, it was like being found in the Chateau Marmont, but having choked on their own vom-vom. That's the only thing I can think of. That is the way they went out, David. Their performance against City, it's harder to watch than that video that's doing the rounds of Robert Dursch urinating on the candy at the checkout of a CVS.
Mm-hmm.
I've never met him, but I imagine Robert Dursch is probably a Raisins fan. At Alex Verdi says, after watching QPR getting relegated from the Premier League to the Championship, it's like catching grayscale and being sent to the ruins of Valeria. It's honestly where QPR deserve to go. At Mr. Tackle tweeted, after that effort, QPR shouldn't just be relegated. They should be sent to MLS.
There's almost nothing positive to say about QPR, and I sort of hate it. I think they're going to be in massive financial trouble as they go down to the Championship. I don't think a lot of their players come out of the season with much credit. They don't seem to have much market value, and it's very, very sad. This is a team, obviously, from West London, you know, and it's a team that I think most Londoners grew up with a lot of affection for. Beautiful ground, amazingly passionate fans. And I think it's just very, very sad and just a complete lack of effort. And I think what's already starting to leak out is just all of the infighting within the club. And I think it's just ugly and unattractive and it's only going to get worse.
Yeah, I mean, poor Rob Green in goal. This was his fourth relegation.
Yeah.
What a career. I wonder if he'd get a medal for relegation.
Yeah.
If so, his personal trophy cabinet must be overflowing.
Yeah, and that awful goal he conceded in the 2010 World Cup against the US, Rob.
Oh, yeah, medal for that.
Great World Cup.
I'll give him a medal for that.
However you want to see it.
Watching Kun Aguero, pacey, powerful sniper against an ageing, panting, tubby journeyman Richard Dunn and octogenarian Clint Hill. I mean, that's the symbol of this QPR campaign.
Yeah.
Fewer clubs have had a less competitive culture than QPR. They've been nothing short of shambolic. They're rotten in the locker room. They're rotten at the management level. They are dreadful in the boardroom. Joey Barton afterwards, he said, I apologise for some bad eggs in the dressing room. The tabloids have identified them. The English tabloids have essentially thrown every single foreign player who doesn't speak English well under the bus. Eduardo Vargas apparently refused to go on as a substitute against Crystal Palace. And the Mirror said it's also Adel Tabat, Oman Traore, Mauro Zarate and Mauricio Illa, essentially all the non-English speakers. So Joey Barton, the man who punched a fellow pro in the down belows, is kind of throwing stones at glass houses. But they've now got this financial fair play case to face up to, which could see them face a multi-million dollar fine. It is a hot mess. I think the saddest thing for the fans is that this is a club who haven't learned anything from their past misadventures. And I don't think there's anything more infuriating in football fandom than in life.
Well, we should say the one player who does come out of credit from Queen's Park Rangers is Charlie Austin. Rog, but he will not be at Queen's Park Raisins next season.
City fans have learned the lesson. Spent the whole game singing happy birthday to
Yaya Toure. Yeah, it's his birthday this midweek, Rog.
Yeah, the world separated into two kinds of people. People who hate their birthday.
Yeah.
And people who need to be absolutely exalted to the max.
Yeah, that's where Yaya lives.
If the latter had a footballing 11, I think Yaya would probably be the captain. You may remember last summer he threatened to leave when the club failed to send them a cake.
Yeah.
Rumours are Yaya is among the players and there's a whole load of them City are willing to send to Juventus in return for Paul Pogba.
Yeah.
Younger and he doesn't like cake.
Yeah. Everton 0, Sunderland 2. Sunderland deflect two shots past poor Tim Howard. We love crap goals and claw their way out of the relegation zone. The Black Cats are 2 points clear of the drop, with a game in hand on all those around them. But as we like to be reminded a lot, the game in hand is against Arsenal, Rog. Leicester and Chelsea also on the horizon for Sunderland.
73% possession Everton had, 592 complete passes to Sunderland's 200. None of this matters. None of it. Absolutely. Sunderland end their run of 8 away games without a win thanks to 2 crappy goals. Danny Graham had not scored since December 2013.
Wow.
You broke that drought by trying to leap out of a teammate shot that was going well wide.
Mm-hmm.
And it would get more fugly. If you think about Lionel Messi's goal, and we'll talk about it, against Bayern, and then you think of the exact opposite. The one Jermaine Defoe scored is probably the dictionary definition there.
Yeah.
Who needs your NBA buzzer beaters when you got Sunderland?
Who needs cleats, goals? Rog? Who needs cleats for that goal?
We'll always have Everton 3, United 0. They can't take that away from us, can they, Davey?
Yeah. Where at Everton? I mean, we'll talk about this as we get to the end of the season, but I just found watching this game, I mean, Everton had all the possession. Everton did concede 2 very, very bad goals, but there were moments in this game that it was actually becoming awkward watching them play in the final third, particularly Romelu Lukaku, who does not seem very happy playing for that team, and his teammates don't seem very happy with him.
You know what? Who cares? I'll tell you, be candid, I didn't experience a single emotion watching Everton in the course of 90 minutes. Huh. The season has just been one of deadened nerve ends. It's like when your performance muscle pushes down on your sciatic muscle and you get a numb bum. That's what I've got, Dave. I've got
a numb bum. You got an Everton numb bum.
Yeah, that's what I've got.
Wow. Aston Villa 1, West Ham 0. Oh, claret and blue battle. I love those, Rog. Tom Cleverley scores his third goal in his last three games to lift Villa 4 points clear of relegation. One win in their last two games, either at Southampton or at home to Burnley, guarantees safety for Tim Sherwood's men. What a story. Yes. What Tim Sherwood has done. What a story for Tom Cleverley. This was a move that almost didn't go through, Rog.
Yep, three goals in three games for joke gag turn late season saviour, Thomas Cleverley. Jack Grealish made the opportunity with another prodigious run. Mm-hmm. And the big change in Tom Cleverley's game is he's making runs into the box. No one marks him because they're all like, why would we mark him? He's crap.
Yeah.
But you've got to score another player reclamation miracle for Dog Whisperer.
Yeah.
Timmy Sherwood. In Cleverley's case, it could be a matter of a player looking to lock in a permanent move and make the deal a seller's market.
I'm happy for Tom Cleverley. I think it's good that something good has happened for him. I'm happy for Sherwood, happy for Aston Villa, Rog. Now, to the race to avoid a fate only slightly more desirable than relegation, Rog, the race to avoid the Europa League. Fifth and sixth place teams will automatically qualify. And if Arsenal win the FA Cup, which Arsene Wenger and most Arsenal fans are assuming they're going to win the FA Cup.
On Stevie G's birthday.
The seventh place team will also go. Leicester 2, Southampton 0. Southampton currently sits seventh after falling to a Riyad Mahrez brace at the King Power Stadium. The win moves Leicester 3 points clear of the drop zone with games against Sunderland and the Raisins remaining.
I said last season that qualifying for the Europa League is as close as I'll ever get to knowing how it feels to have a one-night stand with a supermodel.
Yeah.
It's an amazing idea until you wake up the next morning with a terrible dose of clap. And that's what it is. The Europa League.
Not all supermodels have sexually transmitted diseases.
Only the
Rog.
Ones in my Europa League analogy, Dave.
Oh, yeah.
Dave, because last summer when we were with him in Brazil, Roberto Martinez,
he
told us, kept telling us, what did he say, Dave?
It's going to win the Europa League.
And he kept saying, but we're going to get into the Champions League. That's how we're going to
do it. By winning the Europa League.
And we begged him. Begged him, don't do it. Don't do it. It's a siren luring the sailors onto the rocks.
Yeah.
English teams on average have dropped at least 2.3 places in the league once they qualify. Nothing destroys the assets. It's a cruel trick, Dave. Yeah. Upwardly mobile, aspirational clubs who want a challenge for the Champions League, just as they're about to mount that challenge, they get sent to obscure fringes of Europe, not only to white slave traders and illegal arms smugglers.
Mm-hmm.
They exhaust their squads. They make almost no money from the pursuit.
Yeah.
It's a trick. It's a trick, Dave. And you look at Leicester against Southampton, you look at Spurs, and you're quite clear that these are teams sent out by their manager to have a sad nap during the game to do anything but to race to the bottom, Dave. Leicester, two goals for young Algerian international Mahrez. Southampton played like a team who gave up defending for Lent and then persuaded himself it's still Lent. Nigel Pearson, we are all ostriches now. When you think of great teams in Europe, Dave.
Yeah.
Barcelona.
Uh-huh.
Juventus, Real Madrid, Leicester City. Thrill for Ole White. It's the happiest. Six wins in the last seven. Happiest time to live in Leicester since the town acquired its first fire engine in 1681.
I liked winning the Europa League for Chelsea 2 seasons. Oh, not that I didn't play, Rog, but I did. I liked it as a fan winning the Europa League 2 seasons ago. Isn't there a chance, though, that Everton could actually make it into the Europa League again by winning the fair play table?
Yeah, Everton are playing West Ham, the other team who are battling in that fair play table. It's about bookings, yellow cards. Right? I expect that game. If Roberto Martinez is a sane man, has learned from his mistakes, I expect that game to be an absolute bloodbath.
A sane man would not wear that coat, Rog. Not in May.
Sponsored.
Maybe
it's a sponsorship.
It really is.
His watch. It's why he puts his fist up in the air when Everton score. The rare occasion he's sponsored by that watchmaker.
Yeah.
The coat. He's sponsored by the coat maker. You've noticed it. It works.
As I've said to you a few times, Roger, there's some sponsor money you just don't want to take. Stoke 3, Spurs 0.
We're not going to be sponsored by Depends.
No, it's not going to happen, Roger. We don't want it. Spurs also, we do like that company's other products. Spurs doing their best to avoid a Europa League spot, allowing goals from Charlie Adams, Steven Nzonzi and Mame Diouf. Tottenham now has one win in their last six games. They're really doing very well to avoid the Europa League, Rog. They sit in sixth, 1 point above Southampton.
Addy Christopher tweeted in to say, when do the Charlie Adam to Real Madrid rumours start?
Yeah.
Well, it depends whether by Real Madrid you're referring to the football club or the wine bar in Stoke Town Centre.
That would be a great name for a wine bar in Stoke Town Centre, Rog. Swansea. 1, Arsenal 0. Well, Swansea 1, Arsenal 0. The Swans getting dangerously close to a Europa League spot after an 85th... They haven't read the memo, Rog.
Yep, Gary Monk did not get the Europa League memo.
That was an 85th minute Bafétimbi Gomis header.
They didn't translate the memo into Welsh.
What a win for Swansea, Rog. What a season for Gary Monk and that team.
But what a very, very Arsenal-y performance.
So Arsenal-y.
70% of possession.
Yeah.
Swansea went Chelsea-ish. They put their shield up like a Roman legion in the tortoise testudo formation.
Yeah.
One of my favourite tactics from the Roman military playbook, when the legionnaires would align their shields to form a pack formation, covered with shields at the front and the top. First row of men hold the shields up in front of their bodies. The ones behind them put it over their heads. It's impregnable. And Wenger couldn't work out how to crack it, Dave. Afterwards, a bitter, sour arson called Swansea, quote, a team that just defended and completely refused to play. They had four defenders and six midfielders. He, oddly enough, neglected to mention they also had one goal scorer.
Yeah, exactly.
Bafétimbi Gomis, who netted his fourth goal in four games. Just getting the ball over the line.
I don't understand, Rog. I don't understand Arsenal. You know, we talked earlier about Jose Mourinho always cares. Why would you lose a game at this point of the season like this against Swansea? This is still significant. Arsenal have to play Man United this weekend, Rog. Fourth place is not a trophy. Fourth place is also some form of a poison chalice. You have to play a Champions League qualifier, probably against someone quite tricky in a fairly tricky part of Europe, before you're really warmed up at the beginning of the season, Rog.
Arsenal's going to spend a lot of the off-season thinking about the tortoise or testudo formation. I imagine Swansea played their hearts out. They became only the third team to beat Arsenal both home and away. West Ham did it in 2006-07. Chelsea, Davo, you may have heard of them.
Yeah.
2009-10.
Amazing. As the season winds down and we look back, some of the lessons we've learned. We need your help putting together at Men in Blazers 11 FIFA Ultimate Team, which we'll unveil at the end of the season. It will be comprised of players who have entertained us most over the course of this season, partially because of their play and partially because of the well-written scripts the EPL writers have lovingly crafted for them. 11 Jack Coolbacks. We are looking for you to nominate the one player and tell us why they should make the cut. Send entries via Twitter or email using the hashtag MIB11. That's the Roman numerals for 11. MIBXI. Our favourite receives an end of the season FIFA Ultimate Team prize. Our biggest giveaway yet, courtesy of the GFOPs at EA Sports FIFA.
I've been putting a lot of those FIFA Ultimate Teams together at the weekend now.
Yeah.
I put together my 11, who I think probably wear glasses to bed.
Is Milner's in there?
Mm-hmm. He wears half moons.
Downing. Santi Cazorla.
He wasn't in there. You have to be a
Czech, definitely.
Who I think wears contact lenses, and then when they pad around their house at night, they put on their glasses.
I've seen Czech wear glasses, so I know he wears glasses.
I think Cazorla probably wears like John Lennon ones.
Yeah, very. But no, that's Ozil. Who wears the little Lennons?
Do you know who was in? You know who striker was?
Who?
Olivier Giroud.
Olivier. Oh, he definitely wears.
He wears glasses with no. With no lenses.
Who's in the bifocals?
I think he just wears one to make himself look.
Who's in the bifocals? Okay, Rod, the championship playoffs. Producer JW takes a big intake of air. Gasp. We're just days away from finding out which two championship sides will meet in the playoff final May 25th at Wembley.
Champions League
it's
final.
A big one. The winner of that game will join Bournemouth and Watford in the Premier League next year. The two semi-finals. Middlesbrough, Rog, host Brentford Friday, 2:45 Eastern time. Borough take a 2-1 advantage into the second leg. How amazing.
I've got to say this quietly so JW doesn't hear.
It's a huge
but how amazing would it be if Middlesbrough made it into the Premier League with Sunderland and Newcastle still up? It would be a lot of rivalry up there in the northeast. Jack Quill fullback. Ipswich travel to Norwich for a 7:15 a.m. Eastern Time Saturday kickoff at Carrow Road. Where are you watching that, J-Dubs? Apartment. Very good. The sides
from behind the
drew
couch.
1-1 at Portman Road Saturday. Interesting.
We're trying to put this game into context for American followers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of you tried to describe it as, I think, Real Madrid against Barcelona, but crap.
Yeah.
At MK Clark 12 said it's as if Des Moines and Topeka had MLS football teams.
Yeah, very agricultural towns. Yeah.
If Don Garber's listening, he's making a little note.
And if Des Moines and Topeka were about, what, 20 or 30 miles away from each other, they're pretty close to each other.
First game, I'd say lots of emotion, but not always easy on the eye.
Yeah.
Ipswich manager Mick McCarthy said there'll probably be just one goal in it in the end. It could be settled by a mistake by a player or a referee or a moment of brilliance.
Unlikely.
After watching the first game, it's safe to say it could be a mistake by a player. It could be a mistake by a referee.
Unlikely to be a moment of brilliance.
Or it could be...
Act of God, force majeure.
Or it could come from a ball bobbling around the box, ricocheting off a striker's shin, onto a stranded defender's buttocks, and dribbling over the line.
Oh, that's, I love what crap he means goals.
By a moment of East Anglian brilliance.
Brilliant. Both games will be televised on beIN Sport in the Champions League.
Get Ray on them. Get Ray Hudson commenting on that.
In a game that wrapped up just before we tape this pod.
That's amazing.
Real Madrid 1, Juventus 1, Rog. That means that Juventus, Rog, go through on aggregate. They'll meet Barcelona in the final June 6th. Barca lost to Bayern Munich 3-2 on Tuesday, but advanced 5-3 on aggregate. Oh, this is the final that Fox wanted, Rog.
Yes, they really wanted that Juventus Barcelona.
Oh, big rivalry.
Matchup in that one. We've only got one more game where we'll hear the Champions League theme song this season. We take it for granted,
Champions.
David. If we're talking about it, we've got to talk about that first game, though, the Bayern-Barcelona game.
Yeah.
With, I mean, two European powerhouses going nose to nose, and then a game won by a knockout in that first leg on a magical night of football that will be forever remembered. Mm-hmm. Thanks to the performance of Lionel Messi, Argentinian Jordan Morris.
Yeah.
That second goal he scored, David.
Oh.
I mean, it was like he just posterised Boateng like Michael Jordan dunking over Patrick Ewing.
Yeah.
Boateng fell over as if Messi had whispered a magical, seductive spell into his ear.
Do you know, I had a conversation about that goal today. Snoop Lion came in to take Watch What Happens Live here at the Embassy Row Studios. And Snoop came and had a chat with me afterwards and talked about Messi. We talked about how he is the Michael Jordan of soccer. You just watch what he does with a ball is just a different level than any other player in the game, Roger.
My favourite Uruguayan poet, Eduardo Galeano, once told me, he said, Diego Maradona played as if the ball was tied to his foot.
Yeah.
He said, Lionel Messi plays as if the ball is inside of his shoe.
Wow.
Which is physically impossible, I guess, unless Tom Brady was kind of working with him behind the scenes.
NFL humor.
But watching the tiny giant with his haircut from Supercuts, that's what Michael Jordan looked like, a dominant, unbelievable human. There's something about
a great point.
Messi, I mean, it is. His haircut has always come out of Supercuts.
Yeah.
And then watching him reel away, this tiny little man, having left three players, including Manuel Neuer, David, on their backsides.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great player in a great game, making a great play in the crucial moment. That's what makes football amazing. And Ashrock 0733 said, if Lionel Messi scores and Ray Hudson isn't around to squeal about it, does it count?
Yeah.
And I'll just say, there's not a minute watching Lionel Messi we should take for granted the privilege of being able to watch him play. I wish we could do a Champions League highlight show, David. That's what that game made me feel. Euro suboptimal is the best kind of suboptimal. At Voice 255 says Champions League needs to adopt the best of seven NBA approach. Hashtag Bayern Barca.
That would be amazing. Rog.
But last thing on the Champions League.
Uh-huh.
Watching it today with you in your office.
Yeah.
I can't help but think, Sepp Blatter, Jeremy Schapp's mortal enemy.
Yeah.
Who we, by the way, can take down just by channeling Robin Williams, who during the 1994 World Cup drew. I keep telling this story, but this is how you take out Sepp Blatter. Robin Williams kept referring to him as Sepp Blatter. And Blatter kept correcting him, going, Blatter. And he kept saying, yes, Sepp Blatter. And in the end, Sepp Blatter went mad and said, "This is football, not comedy." That is his Achilles heel. Just mock him. Don't try and take him on. Just make him a universal ridicule, a symbol of ridicule that no brand will want to associate with. But I do, watching the level of the Champions League, the gap between the level of the Champions League football and the World Cup, Davo, is so immense. The quality of the football, the cohesive play of these teams that play at league level day in, day out together, as opposed to all-star games, international games, makes me realise by throwing the World Cup into the places they are placing it, they are more than ever going to kill the goose that laid the golden egg, old FIFA and Blatter.
Then how are we going to get the US men's national team into the Champions League, Rog? That becomes the question, if that becomes the more important tournament.
We'll speak to the person who put the ball inside Messi's sock.
And we need to make sure all Belgian teams go into the Europa, Rog. Actually, that probably happens anyway.
Talking about unbelievable, epic clashes heard all over the world.
And MLS's New York Derby, Rog. Closer to home, Rog. New York Red Bulls 2, NYCFC 1. Ooh, ouch. Two Bradley Wright Phillips goals sink Jason Kreis's side at Red Bull Arena in the first ever New York Derby. New York goes red, Rog.
It was like
red
watching
wins.
The Warriors
red
get
two,
shot.
Blue one.
It was like watching the Warriors get shot.
Yeah.
In Coney Island. That was a level of anger on the streets of New York City, Dave. Yeah. Just reds and blues going at it. Those generations of hatred.
Yeah.
A hatred born 65 days ago when the MLS season began.
Yeah.
What can you say about this? I can say, give this game 10 years and this rivalry will have matured into something with story and narrative and true animosity. But for me, I can't help but watch at the root of all of this kind of frustration and anger, whatever there is there, there's a truth that the New York Red Bulls have honestly only got themselves to blame by blundering through one strategic cock-up after another, failing to engage the New York market in any substantial way and leaving New York City FC a massive opportunity and a huge gap to fill.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, ultimately, they probably won't. This game, though, how did you experience it as a diehard New York City FC fan?
Yeah, well, I think, look, NYCFC, I think were outplayed again, but there's sort of a glass half full, glass half empty thing. The glass half full is that NYCFC are still involved in close game after close game after close game after close game. The glass half empty way to go and look at it is that they are losing close game after close game after close game after close game. This sort of winning culture is not really happening at the club. And yet, Frank Lampard still to arrive. There have been a lot of injuries around the team. They've played so many players in that squad.
I thought it was
so
unfair
far.
That the Red Bulls just had such a distinct advantage. Because the game was played on a full-size soccer field in a proper stadium.
Yeah,
probably very hard. Disorienting for NYCFC. But it was great to see Red Bull Stadium full. 25,000 fans there. That was magic. Also magic to watch Sasha Kljestan run rings around the New York City FC midfield. Mm-hmm. Football was mucky. And the most embarrassing thing for me was just how few frantic wanker signs were being thrown by fans from both sides.
Yeah,
Don Garber's got to work that out. By the way, I've got to ask you this. Before the game, a lot of press for a guy called Jonathan Sanchez, a fan of NYCFC, who unveiled a gigantic New York City FC tattoo that he's just had on his shoulder blade.
Yeah.
What kind of person gets a giant NYCFC logo tattooed on their shoulder blade?
Well, let me remove my jacket and shirt, Rog. No. Well, look, he's a fan. He loves it. He's had the calling. The sorting hat has chosen him.
He's got a good PR agency. Two other American notes. Steinbeck.
Yeah.
Tipperary News. Bob Bradley, a wondrous story. 6 clean sheet, 4-0 blowout against St Jude. Brian Scaretta tweeted, "It's been 555 minutes since Steinbeck of Bob Bradley have conceded a goal." They were meant to be relegation fodder this season. They are now 3 points back from leaders, local powerhouse Rosenborg. And Bob went to Norway to grind his way up the European football ladder, and he's done more than enough to earn his shot at the next level. Bob Bradley, he's a cake boss. Our guest today, like us, is a British expat living in New York City. Unfortunately, the similarities pretty much stop there. He's got a beautiful head of hair, supports Manchester United, and is a philosophical frontman for the Vaccines, who one rock critic recently called an indie rock band with a math rock touch, which makes him sound a little like the Morgan Schneiderlin of pop music. Their new album, English Graffiti, comes out May 25th. We welcome to the pod, standing outside of a Thai curry house in the real Soho, London, Mr. Justin Young.
Hello. Quite an introduction there, thank you.
I try and write an introduction as your mother would write it, Justin, but something you said recently fascinated me in an interview. You talked about the act of creating an album. You said, we wanted to make something that sounds amazing next year and then terrible in 10 years' time. If you listen to anything from the 1990s now, it sounds effing awful, but that's part of its identity. Essentially, you wanted to be the Leeds United of rock music. Why?
Or
the caca. Oh, he's still a mate. He's still got it. What, you got to explain yourself. What's that all about?
That was a slight misquote. It wasn't a misquote. It was quoted perfectly, but it was me misrepresenting us. I guess I sort of had always aimed to make these sort of timeless sounding records, and I guess over the last 2 years, 18 months, 2 years, I realised that actually to make a timeless record, then you kind of need to sound of the time rather than timeless, and you need to sort of embody the period you're making music in, you know, sort of sonically and in terms of production and what you're saying and how you're saying it. And I guess what I was trying to say is that, take like Nevermind, for example, which is one of the first, you know, really important records in my early teenage years. And that sort of is a terrible sounding record to me, but like the songs are just so amazing that it stands up, and it's so of a time, you know, that it doesn't matter. And I think that's what I was trying to say.
The way you describe it, it sounds actually harder to make a of the time record than to make a timeless record. You make it sound even more difficult. But I want to talk about something that has become easy for you, your football fandom. You were born in Southampton. Who do you support?
I support Man United.
I've got three questions for you. How, why, and whither?
Well, I'm 28 now, so I started to, my dad and my brother both supported Southampton. And when I sort of reached a sort of conscious age of knowing what football was and knowing that I kind of wanted to take an interest in it, I guess I was probably 4 or 5 years old, 92, 93 season, right, I think sort of on the cusp, and I'd say right before the cut-off point of anyone labelling me a glory hunter. I was watching News Round, which for anyone in America is a children's news programme, and there was a guy on there, and he collected Man United shirts, and my favourite colour when I was really young was red. It was the only other team I'd heard of, like after Southampton, because I was so young, and I just got really lucky. I didn't want to support the same team as my dad and my brother, and so I just got really lucky.
So it was a conscious act of a 4-year-old rebel.
It was, yeah. I mean, I still remember. I remember it so well. And I remember my dad saying, "You've got to support Southampton." And I remember thinking, "I don't want to support the same team. I don't want to support the same team as you." And so I picked the only other team I'd heard of,
which was in
1992, and it was right at the sort of turning point.
You backed a tiny 500-1 outsider. Tiny little that, and your support, you've just seen them blossom from a tiny little acorn.
I know, it has. I think I made all the difference. But I do maintain a soft spot for Southampton and also Bournemouth, which is an amazing story and something I'm really excited about, because when I went to sort of college or sixth form college, so the end of school, all of the Bournemouth youth team were kind of went to my college. So all those kind of guys are probably, not sure how many of them are left in the team now, but I'm like sort of Bournemouth success story coming from the South Coast, despite being a United fan, is something really, I think, it's amazing and really exciting.
If you possibly direct a little bit of your magic dust that you gave to Manchester United back in 92, 93 and sprinkle it on tiny little Bournemouth, I project a great future for that tiny team. It is an amazing southern hotbed now, with Southampton doing so remarkably, Bournemouth about to be the next Burnley in Americans' kind of affections in the old Premier League. But I've got to ask you about United.
Yeah.
How have you lived the narrative twists of this season? It's been an odd one. The slow, plodding, tactical mess of a start. All change in November. You started to gut out wins without really impressing.
and dominate. They're back. LVG's got it all right. Everything's clicking again. Then you had that run of three losses without scoring in which you're being bare-bottom spanked by Everton Football Club. Where are you emotionally at this point as the season grinds to a halt?
I mean, honestly, I'm sort of slightly dejected. And I think also I get kind of frustrated by friends and much more experienced kind of friends of mine that are so optimistic for next season as they were for this season. But I do share some of it. I think Van Gaal obviously, you know, inherited not only old players, but players we'd spent a whole bunch of money on because, you know, his attentions were obviously elsewhere over the summer. And I think that he's been really hampered by, or we've been hampered by injury. I think he's been hampered by a squad he doesn't necessarily know that well. And there's that sort of classic cliche of Van Gaal takes a while to get going and Reno squad. I went and watched the game on the weekend, Crystal Palace, and I nearly left at half time. I mean, it was so depressing. But equally, I want to think that it's to be expected. I think like missing Carrick has obviously, you know, been a sort of a massive setback, and injury as a whole has been a massive setback. You can tell by my waffling and rambling that I'm kind of really at a loss. I think we were so sort of secure and safe with Ferguson that I think all of us are just, I don't think anyone really knows what to expect, really.
I love your waffling. I'm very fond of your rambling. I will say the Crystal Palace game, Manchester United are turning into a team whose great playmaker, most creative kind of force on the field is David De Gea. And I totally agree.
I know, who I don't think will be there for much longer.
Oh, you've got to lock him down. He's just a midfielder kind of dynamo that United have relied on all season. But you've got, I mean, it has been an odd season. There's just been two powerhouses in the Premier League, just Chelsea and Leicester City. Everybody else is kind of in complete transition. I've got to ask you about Louis van Gaal. Is he a madman? Is he the saviour? Is he the madman's saviour?
I think it's sort of too early to say it this way. I like the fact he's a disciplinarian, and I like the fact he's arrogant. I like the fact he has this sort of confidence that, you know, Moyes didn't have. But on the other hand, I think there's this, I'm still not quite certain I really know or agree with his methods.
You've got Champions League football back, but United are a work in progress in so many areas. You need a centre-back, a Carrick replacement, another elite striker. Is there a part of you, Justin, the worries that an era of kind of guaranteed glory ended once Sir Alex left the club?
Well, it did. I mean, it absolutely did. I mean, we had sort of guaranteed glory in a way that no other club had. I mean, not even Chelsea in the last 10 years. I think that it, I really, you know, you don't know what you got till it's gone, but I think we really did. I think I remember, you know, 2-3 seasons before he left, and even whenever he'd, the numerous times he announced his retirement, it's sort of this fear, really, sort of coming over you of what's next, and the answer is probably nothing anywhere near as good as this. So it is like we now have to face the uncertainty that I think every other club in the Football League has to face, and that's a sort of season-to-season dilemma, isn't it?
Well, it's a season-to-season self-loathing because you're talking to an Everton fan. But let's talk about something far more interesting than me or even Manchester United. Let's talk about you as an elite athlete, Justin. We were chatting to Mumford & Sons. They're coming on our show next week. And they told me that you guys, meaning the vaccines, you're quite good at football. Marcus Mumford told us, he said if there was a World Cup of pop music bands, they'd crush you. What kind of a player are you? And are the Mumford & Sons deluded? Because banjo fumes can do terrible things to a man.
Well, the fumes have sort of subdued, haven't they, of late? So I'll take that. I've kind of, you know, people, when I was younger, I mean, when I was at university, I sort of, you know, like developed a love of beer and also developed chest hair, and so people always used to call me Bestie, which I always thought was, you know, like a great compliment, and also not really very representative of my football. I was always a sort of left midfielder because I'm left-footed, but recently I'm a left back. I'm quite gritty. I don't really like getting forward, but I'm not really scared of a tackle.
My mind started adrift when you told me your chest hair got your name Bestie.
I'm not going to lie. I've had a few drinks.
The Americans who didn't know the vaccines before are all going to be guaranteed to be Googling your hardcore after this one. But the song that introduced me to your band, the cover version, ABBA, Winner Takes It All.
Is that really what introduced you to it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love Nick Lowe as well. I think you did The Beast in Me as well, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, no, thank you. No, I'm really glad you heard that. Yeah, we recorded that, Freddie, our guitarist and myself, recorded that in a hotel room in Latvia. When we were denied entry to Russia.
Oh, out of dark things like the denial of entry into Russia comes greatness in Latvia. It's something we ask a lot of our musical guests. If you could go back in time, play one song at Live Aid, any one song, and make it yours. Make it so you could play a Rolling Stone song where people would think it was the vaccines. You could even take the Indigo Girls' True Greatness and people would think it was the vaccines. What song would you take and who would you play?
I think I'd take Bridge Over Troubled Water.
Yeah. Vampire Weekend chose Come On Eileen.
A great song, and a song actually that we used to, that I always DJ, and that we used to walk on stage to.
Last question. Talking about Bridge Over Troubled Water, Manchester United play Arsenal on Sunday. Doesn't mean everything that it could do if it was, you know, there was more to be settled. Both clubs slightly insecure. It's like watching two slightly wounded dogs have a fight against each other. Predictions, please, Justin Young, from outside the Curry House in Soho.
I have to say, I watched Arsenal play midweek last week, and I thought they looked amazing. Depressingly so, I thought they looked amazing, but unpredictable as well. I mean, of course, I'm going to back United 2-0, but I don't necessarily believe it.
Justin Young, we adore you. We adore your cover versions. We like everything about you, apart from your choice of teams. Warm to Bournemouth. Go back to Southampton. They'll give you a cuddle. And when you're in New York City, come in. Come into the panic room, and we'd love to see your chest hair in person.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, mate. Good luck at the weekend.
Oh, so many musicians, Rog.
So many football-playing musicians.
Yeah.
With terrible taste in football teams.
Vampire Weekend last week on the TV show. Mumford & Sons coming up on Monday.
I can't
Monday.
Wait to meet them.
Rog, I know. Can't wait for that. Okay, on to the Ravens, Rog. Our first Raven is from Chloe Okuno. I was recently listening to an ancient pod dug out of your archives. This was at a time when it seemed like John Terry was soon to be retired and Chelsea were burning through managers. So Davo theorised that perhaps captain, leader, legend JT would become captain, leader, legend, manager. This made me wonder, which current EPL players do you think are most likely to make the transition to manager? And second question, which player, however unlikely, would you most want to see as a manager? Personally, I sort of like the idea of Skrtel terrorising journalists in post-match press conferences, or Fellaini, if only for the sight of an all-grey afro shaking menacingly as he barks orders at his players from the touchline.
Who becomes a good manager? It's really a great player.
Yeah, it's somebody who makes phenomenal effort. The hard men become, you look at Steve Bruce, you look at Nigel Pearson. That's one of the reasons I think that John Terry might end up being a manager. Hard men become decent managers.
I can see him becoming a manager. Yeah. I mean, it's never a goalkeeper. It's never a great player.
Yeah.
They find it too hard to relate to the mindset of mere average players.
Yeah.
Imagine Dave.
Azpilicueta.
Been a very good, thoughtful, kind of tactical manager. Better manager than JT, ultimately.
Yeah.
He'll be like bundling around with Sunderland and Hull. Vincent Kompany.
Yeah.
If you ever talk to him about football, he's so articulate. Such a good football brain and a leader of bloke. George Boyd. Can imagine him being like a great relegation struggler manager. Dutch managers. It's got to be a Dutch guy.
Yeah.
Ron Vlaar, Cement Ron from Villa.
Yeah.
Most of all, the only
thing... Daley Blint. Oh, remember how good-looking he used to be, people would
now
say.
Now he's gone bald.
Now
that's
he's fat
what the job's
bald.
Done to him.
Yeah.
Most of all, I just love it. Love it, love it, love it. If Mario Balotelli became manager of Liverpool
good.
Football Club.
Yeah.
Be amazing.
Or John, bald Fellaini.
John Henry, if you're listening, Mario as manager.
Yeah.
It's the only way.
Yeah. Jack Kulback would be good also, man. Okay, the winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers Poet, Philosopher, Soccer Scribe, Raven of the Week is Jacob Long. I've been listening for some time now, and despite that, I'm still a great fan of the pod. I appreciate your ongoing efforts towards bringing the bald, along with the ginge, out of the shadows, into the light for all to see. As you both often remind us, the initial stages of balding involve feelings of loss, pain, and shame. All too often, these are made worse by trying to hide the inevitable, only to draw attention to that which is no longer there. However, in the timeless struggle between youth and wisdom, arrogance and humility, Shamak and Howard, how does one make the final decision to shave it off? Is there a sign? Is there a feeling? Is there a moment, like a bad relationship, when one simply knows that it's time to leave? Is there a line graph, a flow chart, a scale from Fellaini to Guzan to help men make this crucial judgment? When precisely does one say to the barber, it's been nice knowing you, but this is the end. Take it all. It's over. Take that, Gloria. I had the moment, Roger. I've spoken about it on the pod before, where the lovely woman, Anna, that used to cut my hair for, I think, like $50, said to me, you know what? You can really just do this yourself. Like, you don't really need a real haircut anymore. And at that point, I just took the shears and started shaving.
How can I do a centre point?
Exactly. Yeah.
It's a timely question, because Roberto Martinez, Everton's manager, has taken the plunge this month after years of careful, artful combing.
Yeah.
He's gone for the number one.
Yeah.
He's come out as a fellow bald. Welcome,
yeah,
Roberto.
Welcome.
I don't have many skills.
Yeah.
But the only skill I've been blessed with is I'm a big believer in inner beauty. It's very liberating when it comes to balding, because it means I don't really give a crap.
Mm-hmm.
It's never given me much angst. I've interviewed hundreds of bald men and some bald women for a project that I'm working on.
Mm-hmm.
Not enough bald women, by the way. But most of the fear about balding, listening to people, it's a mere refraction of another issue. Fear of death, intimacy, relationships, bad relationship with your dad, whatever. That's probably better to try and work out than focusing on the bald thing. So three things. Shocking how many men don't know they're going bald until they see a photo of themselves from an odd angle and notice just how bald they've become. It always blows me away.
Here's what
David.
I'd say. Most men look better bald than they ever did with hair. I'm not saying that lots of men with hair look better than men who are bald, but most men who go bald look better when they're bald than they did when they had hair.
I mean, it's even more shocking to me.
Look at an old picture of Jason Statham before he lost his hair. Nowhere near as good looking as when he lost his
hair. People always tell me I look like Jason Statham with hair. It's even more shocking to me. How many people tell me that when they realize they're going bald, their immediate reaction is they must marry whichever partner is close to hand.
Yeah.
They feel like game is over. Mm-hmm. Their gig is done. And also, the thing I think is fascinating, so many men I interviewed believe there's a massive difference between getting a number one buzz, where there's still that feel of hair, and shaving it all off and going full shiny, kind of Michael Bradley.
Yeah.
My mate Michael Cohen, the Arsenal fan, I interviewed him, and he articulated that. He said, I'll only ever get a number one. And I said, what's the difference? This is a man with almost no hair, Michael Cohen, telling me how he must only have. And he looked at me with disgust. He goes, if I shaved it all off, then I'd be a f***ing baldy.
Okay, Rog, your weekend looks like this. Sunderland versus Leicester, 10 a.m. Saturday. Liverpool versus Palace, 12:30 p.m. Saturday. Manchester United versus Arsenal, 11 a.m. Sunday. All games on the NBC family of networks. And in an MLS, Orlando City, remember them, versus the LA Galaxy at 5 p.m. Sunday on ESPN2. Lots of Men in Blazers content out there this week, Rog. Oh, Stevie G's last game at home, Rog.
Great one for lovers of honor guards.
Yeah. Tuesday, we released a pod special with US Women's National Team striker-turned-defender Kelly O'Hara.
Amazing.
After the Pies, our extended interview with Chris and Ezra from Vampire Weekend is up on NBCSports.com/MIB. And this Friday, ahead of the Mad Men series finale, we'll release a pod special with the series creator Matt Weiner.
I love that.
Okay, there are many other ways to connect to us. One is our Amazon Emporium, which helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon, for items big or small, just click off the Emporium page. Men in Blazers gets a tiny percentage that allows us to cover the cost of creating the show. What are you putting in the Emporium this week, Rog?
A book, a classic book.
Oh, we love books.
Time back to the ball question.
Yeah.
Been thinking a lot about machismo. How do you say that word?
Machismo.
Machismo. Adrenaline, how do you say that word?
Adrenaline.
And the need for recklessness.
Recklessness.
In life.
Yeah.
I've been reading The Sun Also Rises.
Hemingway.
Oh, his first novel.
Yeah.
About a gaggle of
I think
bohemians.
He's got a future.
You do?
Yeah.
I think he's done.
It's got some promise. He's a one novel wonder.
It's a very American book, is all I'd say, about bohemians lost and found and lost again amidst the running of the bulls in Pamplona. Which is totally
love
bonkers. Read it if you're wondering if your life needs more brutality, drink and song. Whose life doesn't need more brutality, drink and song?
More of that, Rog. I'm putting in a hammer, Rog. I've had to do a lot of hammering recently, and I realised that the hammer I had was not quite good enough. There's only one brand of hammers, only one brand of tools I purchased, Rog. Stanley. They make a fantastic 20-ounce Ripclaw fiberglass hammer. I was worried about the fiberglass, but it's very good. It just shock absorbs in the handle.
That one's called the Assassin's Choice, that model, by the way, is the nickname in the trade.
It's a bargain. It's only $9.89, Rog, on Amazon. Just worth it. You just need a high-quality hammer, Rog. Oh, and just be careful not to hit your thumb.
The Assassin's Choice.
Which I did once. Okay, Rog, we recently released Men in Blazers Unbuttoned. Now that's what I call Suboptimal Volume 2, the best of 2014 on iTunes, Amazon and Google Play. It's the most suboptimal moments from a year in which Liverpool nearly won the league and the USA nearly won the World Cup. Have a listen and then a sad nap. Check out our Spotify account, men_in_blazers.
Music.
We've posted a playlist with our favourite jukebox songs. What was your brilliant idea this week? Oh, that we should do an album with all of these musicians we work with, and we should do an album of our favourite 80s hits.
Yeah, where they play cover versions with it.
Genius, I want to do that.
Called Karaoke in the Panic Room.
Oh, Panic Room genius, karaoke. Genius. Let's do that. Meninblazers.wickedspaces.com. Go there if you really want to know about us and the origin of a lot of things we talk about. That's a wonder of the modern world. Meninblazers.com is our website. You can sign up for our newsletter there, The Raven, which we produce with our partner, Guinness. On Twitter, at Embassy Davies,
David.
At Rog Bennett.
Rogie.
And at Men in Blazers.
I see.
Usually Rog. Instagram, embassy_Davies, Men in Blazers.
Usually Davies.
Facebook. We got one of those. We've got a subreddit also, meninblazers.reddit.com, maintained by GFOPs, Akshay, Calvin and Alex. Can we get Akshay, Calvin and Alex on the pod one of these
days?
They're
too busy hacking crap.
Very much so. Send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. You can also email us at meninblazers@gmail.com.
Other news, we wish Landon Donovan and his new wife, Hannah, got married last week. A lifetime of health and happiness and avoiding relegation.
Yeah, and watching our TV show, which he doesn't particularly love.
He watched the first part.
Yeah.
And then he got bored and he changed the channel.
Fair enough.
And then he added, it was quite good.
Yeah. Vendapunk, Rog.
War pig.
Who wants to sex Mutombo?
Explosion.
Courage.
Take that, Gloria.
Is that your analysis?
To tweed.
Abrigado, rock on, mate.
Kung fu fight in America.
Love you, Rog.
I love you, Davey. The Assassin's Choice.